The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells,
about residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there,
and the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle, stories about life on the inside told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
With the national election, or the voting part at least, behind us, Georgia took its place at center stage in the political universe, and it immediately used that stage to produce tons of drama. Threats of legal action, charges of incompetence, countercharges of interference, and that was just among Republicans. This at a time when health authorities were warning folks around here to pay a little more attention to stopping the coronavirus from killing people. Did we expect 2020 to end any other way? But we bid you a warm welcome as we try to make sense of it all in this edition of The Political Breakfast. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Republican strategist Brian Robinson and Democratic strategist Theron Johnson are here. Welcome back.
Thanks, Dennis.
Good morning, Dennis.
Well, we entitled our last podcast episode, "Can It Get Any Wilder in Georgia? Don't Answer That." Well, there was a reason, I guess, because it got wilder. Georgia's counties finished their hand-done audit of the results in Georgia's presidential race. Some counties found ballots that hadn't been counted before. But the result, a narrow win for Democratic candidate Joe Biden, remained unchanged. Meanwhile, the state's chief elections officer, Republican Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, has accused GOP South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham of suggesting that he throw away legally cast ballots in some counties. Now, the way Raffensperger tells it, Senator Graham asked him about checking signatures on mail-in ballots, and if a county had a high frequency of mismatched signatures, maybe all of the mail-in ballots in that county could be tossed. That's according to Secretary Raffensperger. Now, Graham denies that he implied that, but Raffensperger's voter implementation chief, Gabe Sterling, who was in on the call, said he heard Graham wonder if someone could go to court and ask that all mail-in ballots in a county be tossed because of the rate of mismatches. O'Brien, you have talked a lot on this podcast about the myth of voter suppression, but if what the Secretary of State is alleging is true, Senator Graham was at least suggesting a strategy that amounts to exactly that.
Well, the important thing here is that Lindsey Graham is not a Georgian. Lindsey Graham is an outsider.
But he is chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. He's not without influence.
No, he's got tremendous influence, but he does not have influence over what votes get counted in Georgia. And the fact is that our Secretary of State, if those allegations are true, maybe there was a misunderstanding, but I don't think he was trying to be inflammatory. I think he was just trying to honestly portray what the call was about. He said, no, we're not doing that. So what you see is Georgia officials, which has always been what I've talked about, always been my focus, is not going to engage in any kind of behavior like that. You know, the Republicans, including, you know, Doug Collins and David Schaefer, who have attacked the process and raised questions and concerns, even they have said every legal vote needs to be counted. And their focus was on illegal votes. And if what Graham was saying was as broad as it seems, then that would be getting into legal votes as well. We had the audit this week. It worked. It did discover some discrepancies, some memory sticks in numerous counties that had not been recorded the first time. So the audit served its purpose. It found problems and now corrected them. And at the end of the day, didn't dramatically change the margin, but did change it toward Trump's favor to some degree. So it is a case of us using due diligence to make sure that we get it right. And I think there's been a commitment from state level officers to protect the integrity of our election system. Most of them have avoided making inflammatory comments or accusations that they can't back up, which I think is hugely important. And so I think that our Republican statewide leaders deserve a lot of credit because they are under tremendous pressure to say, yeah, this was stolen. And they're not. And they're not saying it because it wasn't.
But they're not saying anything, a lot of them. They're not rushing to the defense of Brad Raffensperger.
They're letting the process play out. And of course, on the day that this podcast launches, the Georgia election will be certified. And that should, I hope, bring some closure, some finality, a chance for us to pivot into next steps.
I mean, Dennis, what is going on with the Georgia GOP? I mean, this is bonkers. And that's a word that my good friend Brian Robinson likes to use.
I do.
What's so crazy about this, Dennis, is that I believe Brian when he says that the Secretary of State of Georgia truly feels like they're doing the right thing, meaning, yes, there was going to be an audit. The other thing that's very concerning to me is what you said, Dennis, is that there are some of the top GOP leaders who are remaining silent. And I don't want to get into speculating what's going on in GOP politics in Georgia, but what I can tell you is when you have the governor, lieutenant governor, and the speaker who are not saying anything, and I do know two of those individuals very well, that they probably are doing their what they can behind the scenes to hold on to what's left with the GOP. They don't want to come out and publicly criticize President Trump, but at the same time, they're not rushing to the defense of Secretary Raffensperger. But we do have to give Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan some credit because he went on CNN very, very early on before all of this chaos was caused by President Trump and his supporters and said that there was no widespread voter fraud. This was a well-run election.
But back to the thought of voter suppression for a moment, because Brian has said it's a myth. Theron, I'm going to start with you on this. If what the Secretary of State is saying about his call with Senator Graham is true, do you believe, and then we'll go to Brian, that this was an effort at voter suppression because it involved the possible tossing out of legal ballots?
What Senator Graham is alleged of doing is the epitome of voter suppression. And I want to be careful. He's alleged to have called the Secretary of State of Georgia and asked him not to count legal votes. If that is true, Dennis, then Senator Graham has committed what a lot of Democrats have been saying has been going on in this country for a very long time, and that is voter suppression. But look, Senator Graham is all aboard the Trump train. He would rather have hundreds of thousands of votes thrown out than to stand up to President Trump. I mean, what little integrity does this man have before this election is sort of completely over? I mean, if Senator Graham has done what he's alleged of, then I think that's going to be really, really bad for him and the Republicans in the South going forward.
This is going to be a he said situation. Yes, if he made those requests, maybe there was a misunderstanding. I don't know. But if he made those requests, then that would be inappropriate. And I'm glad that the secretary responded the way he did and said, no, we're not doing that. We're going to follow the law. We're going to protect the franchise of Georgians. And
would that have been a strategy, a suggested strategy of voter suppression, though, do you think?
I don't know how you define it. Frankly, what I know is it's illegal. And that's sort of the bigger picture issue here for me is Georgia has always followed the law. And you're talking about something that would be outside of the law.
And what Secretary Raffensperger alleged later is that some Trump campaign folks, one in particular who kind of had Georgia in his purview, burst into a meeting and demanded that the secretary get on a campaign committee and endorse President Trump. And according to Secretary Raffensperger again, he said no, because secretaries of state, while they can certainly root for a candidate, can't put their thumb on the scale for a candidate. Brian, I'll start with you. Any further word on just how far that goes? And is this an indication that this campaign had been going on for a while and that the attacks we're seeing now are revenge for something he refused to do before?
Whatever rifts occurred there, if there were any rifts, and I don't really know, this rift was not about whether or not the Secretary of State endorsed the Trump campaign. I don't think either side would say that's what this is about. What's going on now has to do with the outcome of the election. And White House forces, Trump campaign forces, are obviously manning the barricades to fight every possible angle to try to chip away at that almost 13,000 vote margin here in Georgia. That is what this is about. It's about the margin. It's about the turnout of this election. Nothing to do with stuff that happened over the summer.
Let's just take partisanship out of it for a second. And I know Brian knows when I say that, he's like, uh-oh, here he goes. He's about to come in with a zinger. This is really sad. If Democrats had a Democratic president who was bullying through his two U.S. senators who are Democrats in Georgia to a Democratic Secretary of State, Republicans will be all over this. This is the one thing I think that the media has got to notice, Dennis, is that Democrats, now don't get me wrong, we have done our part to say, hey, we want this to be over. We want these votes to be counted. But we don't see the attacks from Democrats and Republicans. And so I want Republicans who listen to this podcast, who like to label us as people who support Antifa and want to defund the police and want to open the borders, and we're going to move all these radical people to the suburbs and break in your houses. Look at how the Democrats are really keeping our composure, even how I sound, Dennis, on this podcast. And what's unfortunate is that Brian can't really say, because I've been in his position before, but never have we seen in Georgia that Republicans are self-destructing. I mean, they're attacking one another. This is insane. And you want to know what the root cause of all this is? What has changed in the last 4 years? It's Donald Trump. Donald Trump has forced Republicans all around the country, but particularly in Georgia, to make a choice. Either you're with him or you're against him. And if you stand up like Secretary Raffensperger, they're going to try to run this man out of the party. And so I just want to say that on this show, because I get tired of hearing Republicans try to label Democrats as these divisive individuals. We have handled this situation with a lot of grace and a lot of respect. But I tell you this, for the sake of Georgia, Republicans have got to get their acts together. Discount the votes, make sure they're legal, do everything, and then let's move on. But they are bringing down the reputation of this state right now.
On that point, the person in the middle of this civil war inside the Georgia GOP, who has been silent, at least up until the time we're speaking, is the former Secretary of State, now Governor, Brian Kemp. President Trump has called him out on Twitter for not getting involved. Brian, just how difficult is the position in which former Secretary of State, now Governor Kemp, finds himself?
He is in an unenviable position, but I want to give him credit. There is tremendous pressure on him to echo the White House line. I don't know what those private conversations are. I intentionally don't know. I don't even want to ask my friends who would be in the know on that. But obviously, he has stood strong and said, I'm not going to make any claims, any allegations that cannot be backed up with evidence. I'm going to stick to the facts. I'm not going to undermine faith in our election system. I'm not going to hurl accusations at the integrity of our vote. I think he's biding his time to some degree because we are getting to the certification of our election. The audit is now complete. We know the final number. At some juncture, we'll be having the Electoral College vote. That's going to provide some finality to this. We are all waiting to try to get to these pivot points so we can move on to the next thing. And I think the other wise political calculation that Governor Kemp is making is he understands that these accusations flying back and forth are internal Republican warfare. The Democrats are largely staying on the sidelines. You know, Theron's talking about how calm he sounds. Well, You can be calm when you're on the winning side and you're watching the other side shoot at each other with semi-automatic weapons, which is what's happening. I mean, I would be more than calm if I was there, and I'd be kind of giddy if I was sitting in his chair, because this is exactly what you want to see the other side doing. Internal fighting when there are huge stakes on the line. We had this election coming up on January the 5th. That makes David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler, unlike any other Republicans in this debate, in this state, or in this nation. Everyone else has at least 18 months before they get to the primaries for the 2022 cycle. They've got less than 2 months before they face a general election verdict. Time is of the essence here. Republicans need to be focused on what we can win. Even if Georgia's numbers were flipped, Biden would still be the winner of the Electoral College. So why are we still having this circular gunfight? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. The election is over regardless of what happens in Georgia. What matters and what should matter to Georgia Republicans from top to bottom, from the party apparatus to elected officials, is putting every resource, every bit of energy into not only firing up the base, which I think is the main part of the strategy, Perdue has been quoted saying that, but the fact is that hardcore base who thinks the election was stolen or going to be motivated by that, that's no longer 50% of the state. We've got to get the votes of people who don't think the vote was stolen. We've got to get votes of people who think that those charges are silly and make the state look bad. It's a dangerous game that we're playing right now. No one else in the country has a choice about whether there's unified Democrat control in Washington except for us. And Georgia Republicans better get their head in that game, and they need to do it right now.
Before we get to Theron on that point, let me come back to one thing about Governor Kemp. You said he probably should stay silent tactically, but shouldn't he at least speak out against the kind of attacks we've seen on local elections officials and even some workers? I mean, Raffensperger says he has gotten death threats on his phone. Our WABE colleague, Johnny Kaufman, did a long story on one Fulton County elections worker who was wrongly accused of getting rid of a ballot. A video made the rounds on social media, and those resulting threats sent him into hiding. Shouldn't the governor at least be heard on that kind of stuff?
I think that that would be a good area to step out. That would be one of those where he's not getting on the wrong side of President Trump, which I understand why he can't or doesn't want to do that. That just creates a political headache that's more than anybody really wants to bear the burden of. But I think speaking out on a public safety issue like that would be a way to step forward. And it doesn't have to be in a news conference where you then have to, you know, get a lot of questions you don't want to answer. You know, it could be on Twitter. It could be in a media statement that they put out. I don't think that that's the sole responsibility of Governor Kemp, who's a level-headed guy and certainly has not engaged in any language that incites. I think it goes beyond him. I think that there needs to be a unified message from Republicans that these threats are unacceptable, they are criminal, they are beneath the dignity of Georgians.
Again, I just want to focus on what's sad for our country right now and what's sad for our state. We have a party that is still in control on the state level, and these individuals within the Republican Party need to stand up and basically call for all of this chaos and this madness to end. It's not doing anything but driving down the faith of voters in our electoral process. And what happens when people feel apathetic, when people feel disenfranchised? They stay at home. Well, Republicans know that if they can bring a lot of chaos to this election, continue to go out with these false claims of voter fraud and voter irregularities, the intimidation that is going on, the public safety threats that are going on. I mean, this is all coming from a Republican Party that Georgia voters are expecting them to lead. And so to go specifically to Governor Kemp, I'm sure that he wants to say something. And look, I'm going to say this on the podcast. One of the best things that could have happened to Governor Kemp, honestly, if he really stands a chance of getting reelected in this new blue state of Georgia, is for President Trump to lose. Think about it. If President Trump is no longer in the White House, he can actually try to run a decent governor's mansion, a governor's office that is going to be inclusive of all voters. He can probably figure out a strategy to do things that's going to shore up his Republican base, but make a move to the middle. But while Trump is in the White House, Governor Kemp and any Republican in Georgia cannot do so. And so I think he personally wants to get involved. And more importantly, I think he is unique, Dennis, and what you're getting at is because he is the former Secretary of State. So he's having to sit back and watch these claims that are being made about an office that he knows well. And also, he wants, I'm sure, this to basically end so we can move on. And then as far as the U.S. Senate races, Brian called it out. All this, what we're seeing to our listeners from these two U.S. senators is all orchestrated. It's manufactured chaos. They know that they got to fire their Republican base to get them back out. And so what better way to do it than to really adopt some of the divisive tactics from this president to do so? And what Democrats have got to do, which we are doing, is that we, not through fear, but through factual evidence of what we can do in this country if we're able to send two U.S. senators to Washington that are Democrats, and we can make sure that the Biden-Harris agenda is going to be put forth. And you can't label Joe Biden as this sort of radical Democrat who's going to go to Washington to try to destroy America. That's just not going to work. That's not how he campaigned, and that's not what the voters in the country believe, and more importantly, what the voters believe in Georgia. And so what we've got to figure out as Democrats is, while the Republicans are in total disarray, they're fighting each other, they're trying to tear this state apart, we got to figure out how do we cut through the noise and all the chaos and keep our base motivated. But also, Dennis, lastly, we got to build upon the Biden coalition. You've heard me say that now for 3 weeks. This coalition is a unique new coalition in Georgia that we were able to put together because we had a great person at the top of the ticket. And so we got to expand that coalition of voters, which is a very diverse coalition of voters, and get them to not only come back out on January 5th, but we hope that they will vote absentee, vote by mail, and more importantly, vote early.
One more quick point on Governor Kemp. A new poll from Fox 5 and Insider Advantage showed a fairly significant drop in his approval rating. 37% of the likely voters surveyed said they approved of the way Governor Kemp is doing his job. 44%, though, disapproved. 19% said they weren't sure. This is not where a governor wants to be in the middle of his term, because it appears that the dissatisfaction is not only coming from Democrats, which you'd, of course, expect, but from Republicans, too.
This is a worthless poll. This is the same polling firm, same magazine that called Georgia for Donald Trump. And so now you come back with a poll at a time where I think a lot of us are questioning how do we move forward in reading polls. And then you're going to say this governor's approval rating is dropping when you just basically told us that the state was going to go to Trump. And so I think I want to just really push back on the validity of this organization, these polls, because they have been time and time again wrong.
Woo! Boy, I want to say a couple of things, and I won't speak to the validity of this poll or any other because I don't know, right? But I will
say clearly the governor's getting heat from Republicans as well as Democrats.
Well, I don't know, and this is the thing. What we have seen over the past several months is an inherent Democrat bias tilt in polling, that you're seeing Republicans, the people who are most likely to approve of Governor Kemp's performance, just refusing to participate. And it's for a number of reasons. They think they're media polls. They don't trust the media. They don't trust institutions. And they're just not participating. So I'm a little leery of anything on fave, unfave when it comes to Republican elected officials or for Democrats, because it's probably going to be too high for Democrats. And it's got to do with the self-selection of the polling sample. And they've got to figure that out in the entire industry about how they make sure that you don't have outcomes like the Washington Post NBC poll showing that Biden was going to win Wisconsin by 17 points. And it was a razor thin margin. But look, if there's any validity to those numbers, I think it's a blip. I think it's because Republican voters are angry in general. They perhaps think that the state's going in the wrong direction, but that is based on their angst and anger about the outcome of the Georgia election and Biden getting 13,000 more votes than Trump. And they want to blame somebody. And Governor Kemp is our head of state. And that is who you direct your focus at for praise or for blame, whether or not either is deserved. So I just think that this is a blip right now. I don't think it's a good time to get us a real sense of where Kemp stands with the electorate. And speaking of Kemp, let me echo and agree with my friend Theron. Joe Biden winning is the best political event for Kemp, because the Democrats in the state would be so mobilized if Trump were still the president in 2022. And we've seen historically that the president's party often has a bad midterm. And that would play to the Republicans' advantage, to Brian Kemp, Jeff Duncan's advantage in the 2022 election. And we saw it in 2018. Trump in the White House, Democrats have a mini blue wave election and pick up a lot of seats in the U.S. House, particularly in suburban districts where people were responding negatively to the president. So the ability to have a foil, to have somebody that he can attack and create a contrast with in the White House, will provide a lot of tools in the toolbox for Brian Kemp. And as an added bonus, he won't be having to risk alienating Trump supporters and Trump fans by being constantly asked about what Trump is saying on Twitter or what comments he's made in the media. The focus isn't going to be on that in 2022 unless Trump is actively out there campaigning still.
Which could certainly happen.
Which could happen, certainly. I mean, yeah, I mean, he's not going away. He's not going away, but he's going away from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
I do want to be clear, though. While I do think that's a good thing for Brian Kemp, I believe that Democrats are going to make tremendous strides in 2022. I think we're going to build upon on what we've been able to do in 2020. And so we will have a slate of good candidates to compete in every single statewide race in 2022. And we're going to have the momentum and a wonderful slate of candidates to compete for the state Senate and for the state House. And so while we're focusing on what's good for Governor Kemp, which, you know, again, that's why we call balls and strikes on this podcast, I don't want our listeners to think that I am in any way inferring that Democrats are not going to continue to have a good year in 2022.
And let me follow up on that real quickly. One, I think what's going to diminish some of those Democrat gains is that the Republicans maintain control of the General Assembly and therefore will be drawing new lines that will help them cement their majorities, at least for these next few cycles. So that's going to minimize some of those gains. That's why the Democrats' best hope is winning statewide elections. That is the opportunity for Democrats. And let me offer this warning to Republicans. If you want to make Theron's dreams come true, if you want to make Theron's predictions come true, let's continue down this track where any statewide official who didn't come out and say the election was stolen, who didn't come out and say this was all fraud, if President Trump endorses primary opponents to people who wouldn't come out and say the election was stolen, we're going to have incredibly divisive primaries and wounded candidates going into the general. We have great incumbents, Chris Carr, Jeff Duncan, Brian Kemp, Brad Raffensperger, Mark Butler, and for the next time, we'll have the insurance commissioner, John King, on there as well. We have great candidates, and those incumbents, should all of them choose to run again, need to have the unified support of the party, because in a 50-50 state, and if the trajectory goes forward, it won't be 50-50 in 2022. The Democrats may have a numerical advantage if the population trends continue what they've been for the last 10 years. So we're going to just have to be better. We can't count on just having more Republicans than there are Democrats in the state, because that's not true anymore. We've got to be better. I don't know why I'm so fired up today, but I really am. And I don't, but
meanwhile, January 5th is looming. We'll look at that and a surge potentially in COVID-19, that and more, when the Political Breakfast continues. Stay right here.
Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
You love free. And at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
And we are back on The Political Breakfast. Thanks very much for being with us. I'm Dennis O'Hare, along with Republican strategist Brian Robinson and Democratic strategist Theron Johnson. Gentlemen, we've talked a good bit about the Senate runoffs, so let's just sum up a couple of other points very quickly. In the Loeffler-Warnock race, Senator Loeffler, Brian, appears to have inflicted a wound on herself. During an interview on Fox News, she asked for people to visit her campaign website and make contributions, which is a normal thing for a candidate to do. But the problem here was she was doing this from a congressional office building. Brian, that's an open and shut ethics violation, isn't it? But does it matter in terms of voters?
No, I don't think it matters in terms of voters. And look, it is a violation. I think that Senator Loeffler would say, I messed up, and that's fine. Look, this is her first year in office. Is there ever been a senator who has ever gone into office and faced such a trial by fire as she has? I don't know that getting a briefing on all the protocols in the Senate has been what she's been able to do this year. She's had to hit the ground running as a U.S. senator, learn all those issues that are coming before her committees and what's important to Georgia. No matter how well-informed you are or how deep your experience in Georgia, there's still going to be a steep learning curve for a new U.S. senator. So I think we should exercise a little bit of grace here and say, yeah, that was wrong. Shouldn't have done it. It's a violation. But let's move on. And she won't do it again. I think that's the way to move forward. It's not like she's getting a kickback on a government contract, right? It's not that kind of an ethical violation. It is a minor technical violation and one that she probably just didn't know better yet.
It is a bit ironic, though, isn't it? Because the man that Loeffler replaced, retired Republican Senator Johnny Isaacson, served on the Ethics Committee for many years, quite a few of those as chairman.
Yes, he did. And of course, Senator Loeffler wisely has kept on some of Isaacson's staff, and they are an excellent staff. I think probably one of the best that we had in Washington, just very responsive to constituents, and they served Johnny very well. So I'm sure some of them cringe when they heard it. I'm sure that they did what good staff do and say, hate to tell you this, but we're going to have to clean this up a little bit because that's what good staff do, and I'm sure that's what happened here.
Yeah. So, you know, Brian and I have had the opportunity to work for a few members of Congress, and one of the things that we always wanted to make sure is that you had a designated place, a designated room that's not your congressional or senatorial office in this instance where you can actually raise money. So what also makes this very troubling for Senator Loeffler and her campaign is that she made this call and encouraged people to donate to her campaign while on national television. And so this is something I think we will hear a lot about going forward.
Meanwhile, Senator Perdue in his race against John Ossoff faces some new allegations that he profited from his position. This is from the Daily Beast. It has reported that the profits this time were linked to his work as chair of a Senate subcommittee on sea power. Now, according to the Daily Beast, just before he took that chairman's job, Senator Perdue bought up stock in a company that makes parts for submarines. Then when he became chairman, according to the story, Perdue began working on a bill that sent additional Navy funding to buy one of that company's products for subs, something that might make the stock go up. And then Perdue sold off his stock, making thousands of dollars in profits. Now, Brian, charges of insider financial dealings are not new to Senator Perdue, and he has aggressively denied them. When it comes to voters, is this just more of the same, or is this new one real trouble in a time when there's not much time before the runoff?
Senator Perdue has, from the very beginning of the charges about his stocks going back to the Senate briefing on COVID in the winter, has fought back those allegations very successfully. He has pointed out that he doesn't have control over his stock purchases. It's done by a third party, and that is a ethical firewall that hugely important to his storyline here. And I'm sure that's the case in this example as well. If this is something that gets legs, it's going to be something like with the stock purchase or stock sale issue back in the winter that they need to give an explanation for. In the past, there have been strong explanations for these transactions. Our two senators happen to be two of the wealthiest U.S. senators. So, of course, they have large portfolios, lots of buying and selling in a normal course of business for them. I don't for a second believe that they are poring over their holdings every day and making these decisions. We probably need to hear their side of the story on it.
Yeah, I think what this really does, Dennis, is that it only helps John Ossoff and the Democrats sort of present to the voters of Georgia of basically a battle between, hey, I'm John Ossoff, I can fight for the, you know, the hardworking middle class voter here that's not a multimillionaire and it has billions in assets. It's also, you know, gives Ossoff an opportunity to say, hey, I'm fighting for the working class Georgians and the little guy, while you have, as Brian mentioned, two of the richest U.S. senators serving you in Georgia. And then the last thing is this, what it looks like and what people are kind of alleging, it hasn't been proven, as Brian says, so we don't want to be non-factual here, is that they somehow were giving some type of information. And what's really in question is the timing, Dennis. And so I think lesson learned for elected officials going forward, whenever you get some information and you have a third party source that's kind of managing your finances, you may want to make sure that you publicly come out and say, hey, I just got this information, not sure what's going to happen, but I want to, you know, assure the American people, in this case, all Georgians, that I will not be communicating with this third party source to encourage them to do anything differently than they already are doing with my stocks based on the meeting that I just had. What's going for, people are going to have to be very transparent about their financial dealings when they're elected officials, particularly when you are a U.S. senator and you're receiving briefings about things that are going to become detrimental if they happen to the American economy.
The other thing that is hanging over the runoffs is COVID-19. And according to the latest report from the White House Coronavirus Task Force, Georgia did do better than all but two other states when it came to the rate of new cases. But that's only because nearly everybody else is doing so much worse. The report, which was obtained by our WABE colleague Sam Whitehead, said Georgia is heading for a possible surge because of holiday gatherings. It urged authorities to push the wearing of masks at all times in public to ensure social distancing, to make sure that people understand the risks of indoor gatherings. Brian, Governor Kemp reissued his coronavirus executive order with no changes, just as this White House task report was coming out. Now, that means that bars and restaurants can continue indoor dining, which more people might use now because outside dining is not as attractive an option when it's colder. How much sense does it make to change nothing when conditions are changing?
I think we're going to see a change in personal behavior. I don't know about you guys or for our listening audience, but for me personally, I have seen a spike in my personal life. I have come across numerous instances in the last 7 days since the last time we taped Political Breakfast. People who are sick with COVID now or who have been exposed were sitting in meetings next to people who had COVID and were quarantining. It has happened at least 5 or 6 times just to me, just in the last week. It's been extremely stressful and it has made me alter my behavior somewhat. And I'd imagine that's going to be true for a lot of other people too. I think our guard was down because for many of us, as I've said here many times, we didn't know people who had gotten desperately sick. We didn't know people who had died, perhaps. It seemed like a distant threat, one that we were willing to weather, one that we were willing to risk in order to have the joys and normality of regular life. Now that the threat is spiking again and it's so widespread, I think people are going to put their guards back up. I know that I am.
But does it make sense for the governor to leave his order unchanged when clearly we're looking at the potential for a surge in cases?
I think what you're seeing in other states as well is where these new restrictions are coming back are in places where the healthcare systems are getting overwhelmed. And if we start getting to capacity, we start getting to a place where we're not able to have beds for people who have heart attacks or strokes or ongoing cancer treatments, that's when you got to start taking perhaps some new looks at restrictions. You know, Governor Kemp has been consistent in his messaging on this, that we cannot get through it with government mandates. We got to rely on personal responsibility. I think that his leadership has helped keep our economy going strong. It has been much better off than some other states, and Brian Kemp gets a lot of credit for that. But he's also been nimble. He's also been responsible about encouraging use of masks. Now, there are some larger societal things going on that are beyond his control. These Republican rallies where people are closely gathered without masks, that's not a good image. Those aren't good optics. But I think that that's a force bigger than Brian Kemp.
I think what has got to happen here in Georgia is that we've all got to continue to make sure that we not only protect ourselves, but we protect others. And it's really only doing things in person unless you absolutely have to. As Brian mentioned, I know a few people as well that had COVID that they didn't know they had it. And there's very strange stories about how they were able to get this virus, but also just hearing how it's really affected their lives going forward and the missed time from work and missed time with their families. And so I think ultimately, look, the governor is doing what he's been doing. I always encourage him, to try to do more. Not saying he's not doing anything. He is. He's communicating with the public. I know he's worried about this issue. I know it's very important to him. And I just would think that local elected officials would want to talk to the governor and continue to have an open line of communication to figure out how do we make sure we brace ourselves when it gets to Thanksgiving and to Christmas. Because as you mentioned, Dennis, restaurants now are not going to be able to just put everyone outside. They're going to have to invest in heaters. They're going to have to invest in maybe tents and things like that to try to continue to survive. And so we got to continue to take this seriously, wear our masks, wash our hands, and socially distance.
And Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms has even brought the city's increase in shootings into the COVID-19 debate. In a press briefing this week, she said the governor's refusal to restrict bars and restaurants has lured people in from out of state to party at nightclubs and bars, and then bad things can happen. She cited the recent shooting death of Chicago rapper King Von at an Atlanta club. He had come in for an album release party. Theron, is this a plausible argument, though, to make by citing a single instance and saying, okay, the problems that we're having of violence in the city are at the governor's feet because of COVID?
You know, the mayor can defend why she put this on the governor. I think she did that. But I will tell you this. I do think leaders have got to come together, figure out a way to make sure that we hold these bar owners and these restaurant owners. And quite frankly, Dennis, a lot of restaurants that turn into sort of a club atmosphere at certain days or certain hours of the day to try to, you know, get by, we got to make sure that we hold them responsible, make sure they get any adequate security, make sure that things are not happening, because we definitely don't want people being shot. We definitely don't want more shootings and murders in this city. And so, again, I'm not going to get into how she sort of brought the governor into this, but I will tell you that the mayor is solely focused on trying to reduce the amount of crime. Public safety is her number one priority right now. And so what's interesting to me is that, you know, she gets criticized for not talking to local media about what she's doing on crime. And then all the, not you, Dennis, but all the other media, all they want to focus on is what she said about the governor. Totally disregarded all the other things that she's saying as far as the investments of technology to be smart on crime. She also talked about how recruitment is up. But, you know, again, the media won't focus on that, right? Because they just want to focus on one thing that she said about Governor Kemp. And so I think that what you'll see is that while recruitment is up, the culture in APD is improving. It's not where it needs to be, but it's definitely improving. And lastly, I think Interim Chief Rodney Bryant is doing the best that he can to try to move this force forward, but also do what he can to communicate to the public about some of the public safety priorities that this administration has.
That's silliness. That's it. That's all I have to say.
Before we wrap up, we should mention at this point that we will be taking Thanksgiving week off, so we'll be back in 2 weeks with the Political Breakfast. And we can't leave without sending a shout out to Jim Galloway, the veteran political insider, reporter, and columnist for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, After 4+ decades of covering politics in this city, he is retiring after the runoffs. Jim Galloway is a gentleman and one of the best ever to cover politics in this city. Just wanted to send out my respect and congratulations to him on a tremendous career and all the best wishes for the future. He is one of the folks who makes our city better and our region better, and we will miss him.
Yeah, I don't know if Galloway is in the Atlanta Press Club Hall of Fame like you are, Dennis, but I would imagine he is. And if he's not, he should be and will be. He is one of the most important voices in political journalism in the state. And what I appreciate about him is somebody who has worked with him on the other side of it as a political communicator is that he was always available. He would always listen. He was responsive. Jim played with a straight hand. He wasn't mean. He wasn't cynical. He didn't have an obvious ideological bent. Now, he had his theories on things, some of which I didn't agree with, but he was always fair and kind and just a good guy. And we're going to miss him. And I just want to say, Jim, thank you for your service to our state. Thank you for being a friend. And I hope you really enjoy retirement and getting to work in your wood shop in the footsteps of your craftsman grandfather. And I hope you enjoy your well-deserved Cox Enterprises pension.
Jim Galloway, and as I refer to him as the chief, has been a reporter that I've been able to develop a strong relationship with in my 20 years of political activism and being involved in campaigns. And I just remember waking up every morning, 20 years ago, or even 15 to 10 years ago, before he started the Political Insider, just wanting to know, what is Galloway saying? What does Galloway think about this? He was oftentimes the explainer in chief because he could take any complex issue and really make it make sense to us in the political world. And if he feels like you have said something that's correct, he gives you praise, but also he would challenge us as politicos and operatives to back up our claims with evidence. And so, again, Jim, we're going to miss you, buddy. I think you still owe me some scotch for a bet that we made about 6 or 8 years ago on a Republican primary. So I'm definitely going to make sure I drive up to Northwest Cobb and sit on your porch, man, and we're going to drink some scotch and drink some bourbon. But thank you so much for your service. And again, he is going to be missed. And I hope that other reporters and journalists try to make sure that they emulate what Jim Galloway has shown us for over 4 decades in Georgia.
And that's it for this week's Political Breakfast. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Brian Robinson is a Republican strategist, communications consultant, and former deputy chief of staff to Governor Nathan Deal. Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist, public affairs and government consultant, former National Southern Regional Director for the Obama 2012 campaign, and most recently, a senior advisor to the Biden Georgia campaign. Thanks so much to you both.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving and congratulations, Jim Galloway.
And you can follow us on Twitter. Brian is at Lord Tinsdale. That's TINSDALE. Theron is at Theron Johnson. And I'm at DENISOHAYER. Our thanks to Kevin Rinker and John Haas for their production assistance. And if you like this show, please subscribe. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. And please be sure to rate us. That's a great way to make sure other people can find us. And don't forget to check out all the other fantastic podcasts from WABE. There's up-to-the-minute information on the coronavirus on Did You Wash Your Hands with Sam Whitehead, a deep dive into the politics and money in one corner of the gun debate. Lisa Hagan brings you No Compromise. And then there's the new season of the Peabody Award-winning Buried Truths. Hank Klibanoff unearths details about the murder of Ahmaud Arbery in Brunswick. And here on The Political Breakfast, we will be back in your feed and in your head real soon with more nourishing political conversation. Be sure to join us. Have a great and a safe week and a happy Thanksgiving.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WAB politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WAB politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WAB.org or your favorite podcast platform.